VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Tuesday that Israel's forces will stay in a buffer zone on the Syrian border for the foreseeable future. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Standing atop Mount Hermon, Netanyahu said Israeli troops will remain until another agreement is found to ensure the Jewish state's security. It was apparently the first time a sitting Israeli leader stepped foot that far into Syria. Israel's capture of the demilitarized area in Syrian territories drawing criticism that it's violated a 1974 ceasefire setting up the buffer zone. UN spokesman Stefan Dujarric says a deal is a deal.
Occupation is occupation. Whether it lasts a week, a month, or a year, it remains occupation.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Amid conflicting reports about Russia's future in Syria, Russian military assets are on the move in Latakia, the home province of fallen dictator Bashar al-Assad and his father. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports.
Jets and airplanes move off this Russian military base in the Latakia province of Syria. In the news and on the streets, there are conflicting reports about where they are going. Some say they are leaving Syria. Others say they are not. A nearby neighborhood still has shops with signs in Russian, catering to soldiers' needs. Some locals tell us they fear minority groups in Syria will be in danger without Russian protection after the fall of the Bashar al-Assad regime more than a week ago. Others say the Russians' move is a sign that the war is ending. Russia was a close ally of the Assad government, entering the Syrian civil war to defend the regime in 2015. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Latakia, Syria.
This is VOA News. A senior U.S. military official said on Tuesday that a couple hundred North Korean troops fighting alongside Russian forces against Ukraine had been killed or wounded in battle in the Kursk border region. The official, who spoke on condition of anonymity to provide a U.S. assessment of the war, didn't provide details on exactly how many had been killed. The official says the North Korean forces don't appear to be battle-hardened, which contributes to the number of casualties they've had. The man accused of killing an American healthcare executive was charged on Tuesday with murder as an act of terrorism. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
The defendant is charged with one count of murder in the first degree and two counts of murder in the second degree, including one count of murder in the second degree as an act of terrorism.
Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg at a news conference. Luigi Mangione was already charged with murder in the killing of Brian Thompson, but this terror allegation brought forward by Bragg is new.
This was a frightening, well-planned, targeted murder that was intended to cause shock and attention and intimidation.
Thompson, who was 50, was shot dead as he walked to a Manhattan hotel where Minnesota-based United Healthcare, the United States' biggest medical insurer, was holding an investor conference. I'm Haya Panjwani.
Residents of New Jersey and other eastern U.S. states have been saying for weeks they are seeing thousands of unidentified drones flying overhead. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
The phenomenon has sparked conspiracy theories and demands from lawmakers and some state officials for investigations into what's soaring overhead on the East Coast. Since November, hundreds of people have shared photos and videos online. The majority of reported sightings have come from New Jersey, but people in Maryland, Virginia, Massachusetts, and New York have reported seeing them as well. The White House and the FBI have said the objects pose no threat. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said in a recent interview that there was no question New Jersey residents were seeing some drones, though he said at least some of the sightings were of manned aircraft. New York Governor Kathy Hochul called on Congress to enact stricter rules for drones, while New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy asked President Joe Biden for more resources to investigate the sightings. Some lawmakers have suggested that foreign countries could be dispatching the drones.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Violence in the streets of Mozambique's capital after a court declares victory for the ruling party candidate.
Dentro da República de Moçambique.
One proclaims a citizen Daniel Francisco Chapo elected president of the Republic of Mozambique.
Journalists in Chad wonder when, if they will ever have the government see its lifting of a ban on broadcasting certain material.
Barker says Chad's high media and audiovisual authority that he leads noticed that before elections, rich politicians hire media organizations to broadcast campaign messages.
And what the Pope had to say tonight at Christmas Eve Mass. Immediately after Mozambique's top court declared election victory for the country's ruling Frelimo party and its presidential candidate Daniel Chapo on Tuesday, protests broke out on the streets. Earlier, protests had over widespread vote rigging sparked nearly 2 months of violent protests, causing the deaths of more than 100 people and injuring several others. Frelimo has been running Mozambique for 49 years. Charles Manguiro has more from Maputo.
After more than 55 days of waiting, the chairperson of the Constitutional Council, Lucia Ribeiro, on Monday acknowledged irregularities in the election but said this did not substantially influence the results and that Daniel Chapo of the governing Frelimo party won with 65.17% of the vote, while opposition politician Venancio Mondlane had 24.29%. The Constitutional Council also gave Frelimo a majority in parliament and all the 10 provincial governors. The results were initially announced by the National Election Commission in late October and triggered protests for more than 8 weeks after Mondlane rejected the result and called for protests that resulted in at least 130 deaths in clashes with the police.
Proclama eleito presidente da República de Moçambique.
One proclaims a citizen Daniel Francisco Chapo elected president of the Republic of Mozambique. Two validates the results of the parliamentary elections on October 9, 2024. According to the final ruling for parliament, Frelimo's number of seats was cut from 195 to 169. The optimistic party for the development of Mozambique, which supported Mondlane, remains the second largest party. Its number of seats increased from 31 to 43. Mozambique held several elections on October 9th, presidential, legislative, and provincial. The results announced by the National Election Commission in October gave a victory to Chapo. In his acceptance speech on Monday, Chapo said he is ready to serve the interest of all Mozambicans and not just for his party, and promised to introduce several reforms.
Ficou claro durante esses dias que o nosso sistema eleitoral...
It has become clear during these days that our electoral system needs profound reforms. And we all agree, we need to build a new democratic architecture that responds to the aspirations of our society and not just the partisan interests. I want to take this opportunity to say that I am willing to lead this reform process of our society and not just the partisan interest. I want to take this opportunity to say that I am willing to lead this reform process. Soon after the announcement of the results, Mondlane supporters again protested in the capital Maputo, burning tires and blocking roads. Mondlane accused Frelimo of rigging the vote and called for a national shutdown starting this Friday. A human rights activist and director of the Center for Democracy and Human Rights, Adriano Nuvunga, says the results proclaimed by the Constitutional Council will only bring problems to the country instead of solving them.
É inacreditável que o Conselho Constitucional tenha lido estes resultados.
It is unbelievable that the Constitutional Council read these results, knowing that the general state of the nation in Mozambique feels attacked by these results. This would have been the moment for the Council bringing the nation together, mobilizing to find a formula for everyone to feel represented in what will be the next government. Multiple human rights organizations reported that violent and repressive measures were used by security forces against protesters who were taking part in peaceful demonstrations. At least 300 protesters have also been arrested in connection with these demonstrations since October. With all the contesting parties rejecting the results on Monday, violent protests will continue in Mozambique at least for the coming weeks. Charles Mangwiro, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Online media journalists in Chad are voicing dissatisfaction and frustration over officials' refusal to lift a ban on the broadcasting of audiovisual content. The High Media and Audiovisual Authority, as it's known, or HAMA, accuses journalists of reposting videos without the content producer's permission. But journalists say they are being silenced from reporting on critical election issues. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more from neighboring Cameroon.
Bello Bakari Mana is the president of the Association of Online Media of Chad. Mana took part in a protest Tuesday in N'Djamena against what he calls a deliberate attempt by HAMA to silence Chad's online media. Mana says several hundred online reporters, assisted by local radio, print and TV journalists are in N'Djamena to let the world know that the media is being silenced in Chad. He says they will continue protesting until HAMA stops threatening journalists and lifts what he calls its illegal December 4 ban on the broadcast of online audiovisual content. Bello spoke to VOA from N'Djamena via a messaging app. Bello also says only police can compel HAMA to respect the lifting of a ban on the broadcasting of online audiovisual content, but that police are controlled by the government, which ordered the ban. HAMA says it prohibited online newspapers from broadcasting audiovisual content because many of the newspapers refused to obey an order earlier this year to stop reposting videos from foreign sources, including international media outlets, without the author or media outlet's permission as required by law. Journalists say the decision, taken before elections on December 29 to mark an end to Chad's 3-year transitional period, is an indication the government, through HAMA, wants to silence online media that the government has described as highly critical. HAMA has always complained that online media regularly publish unverifiable information about President Mahamat Idris Deby. Deby became Chad's transitional president in April 2021 after his father, Idris Deby Idnu, was killed in a gun battle with rebels following 30 years in power. Deby was declared the winner of Chad's contested May 6 presidential polls amid opposition and civil society allegations the victory was stolen. Government officials in Chad complained after presidential elections that online media were reporting on and posting videos of opposition and civil society members, saying that Deby wants to continue his late father's rule, according to local media. Journalists in Chad say by banning online audiovisual content, HAMA wants to silence online media that have been reporting that Deby's Patriotic Salvation Movement, or MPS, wants to use the polls to consolidate its grip on power at all costs. Abderrahman Barka is the president of HAMA, created by Chad's government to regulate the media in the Central African state. Barker says Chad's High Media and Audiovisual Authority that he leads noticed that before elections, rich politicians hire media organizations to broadcast campaign messages, and that poses a disadvantage to politicians who don't have a lot of money. He says HAMA is reinforcing the law which requires the media to give equal access without pay to all political parties taking part in elections. Barker spoke on state TV on Tuesday. He said Chadian laws do not permit online newspapers to broadcast audiovisual content, but did not comment on whether a Supreme Court decision to lift the ban will be respected. Chad's online journalists say the ban has affected about 60% of their audience who no longer have access to online media. Mokki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
And there is trouble for journalists in Zambia. A new report says media freedoms in that South Central African country are under attack. It says more than 60% of people there surveyed think the media cannot operate freely due to frequent instances of harassment and intimidation faced by journalists and bloggers. Kathy Short has that story from Lusaka.
The Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA, launched its report on December 17th in Zambia's capital, Lusaka. MISA chairperson Lorraine Mwanza said that journalists in Zambia still face censorship and violence in the course of their duties. Both she and the report cited the case of Thomas Ziziambo, an investigative journalist who has been arrested three times in the last 13 months for writing stories that Zambian authorities deemed overly critical. Ziziambo faces up to 7 years in prison if convicted of charges that include libel and sedition. Ziziambo told VOA that he will not stop writing and reporting.
All the three cases, basically, it's a journalist trying to find the answers on behalf of the public. But I'm now in court. There was instead of the government answering, they've decided to use the police to criminalize journalism and take me to court. So I'm in court with three criminal charges before three different measures.
Ziziambo's legal trouble started in November 2023 when he was arrested in connection with an article in which he alleged the government institution was renting a property from President Hakainde Hichilema. In August of this year, he was arrested for a 2022 story about an allegedly illegal government purchase of fertilizer. And in October, he was arrested for an article he wrote about food imports. The most recent arrest came hours after President Hichilema promised to uphold press freedom in a speech read on his behalf by chief government spokesperson Cornelius Mwetwa. Joan Chirwa is the founder of a Zambian media advocacy group, the Free Press Initiative. Chirwa told VOA she agrees with the findings of the MISA report.
We have seen political party figures still storming radio stations to disturb programming and threaten journalists there. We have seen journalists being detained by the police. We have also seen journalists being lumped with criminal charges just because of what they have written. And our biggest worry right now is what may likely happen as we get closer to the 2026 election.
Chirwa criticized colonial-era laws being used by authorities against journalists in Zambia. These include criminal defamation, sedition, and state security laws, which Chirwa says are a hindrance to journalists playing their role as a watchdog on the government. However, at the launch of the MISA report, an official at the Information Ministry, Mumanga Moden Mayembe, argued that the government has not interfered with media freedoms at all. Mayembe said the government has opened up the media space as evidenced by its licensing of more than 200 radio stations, 50 TV stations, and many online platforms.
When platforms are pure, then there will be few people expressing themselves on those platforms. When we just had one TV station, for you to appear on TV, you needed to be a president, you needed to be a vice president, a minister, or at least somebody with a name in society.
However, Mutoki Mumo, the African program coordinator with the Committee to Protect Journalists, said in a recent statement that the continued harassment of Ziziambo paints a stark picture of the emptiness behind the government's pledges to protect journalists. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
Cameroonians will head to the polls next year to elect their next president. Previous elections in the capital, the Central African nation, were marred by widespread disinformation. This time, journalists and media professionals say they're taking preemptive measures to stop the flow of falsehoods. Newton Zokek Danhatu reports from Bouay, Cameroon.
Ambo Vanessa Lizzie, a social media content creator in Bouya, was browsing through social media when news popped up that falsely reported that Cameroon's 91-year-old president, Paul Biya, had died. Vanessa Lizzie suspected the news to be fake, but the president was out of the country and the government didn't release a statement denying the rumor until after a month following official visit to China. But the news had already gone viral.
In as much as we want change, I will not wish anybody dead.
The rumor, it turns out, was started by an anti-separatist group working to establish an autonomous English-speaking region in Cameroon. Batata Boris Kalof, station manager of CBS Bouya in southwest Cameroon, vows to fight similar rumors and provide accurate reporting, especially as the 2025 election approaches. He says he spent over 5 years fact-checking reports.
I'm really preparing myself to tackle elections misinformation that may come in.
Jude Mbaku, the editor-in-chief of DMRTV Bouya, is a leading fact-checker in the region. He's tracked separatist group using social media to mislead the public, even on personal matters involving the Cameroonian National Football Club.
When the Lions went to Cote d'Ivoire for the African Nations Cup there, the Indomitable Lions were there, rumor peddlers had it that Jack Clinton had resigned from the squad. And those who propagated this more were the separatist fighters, because this was not done as a matter of a mistaken thing. It was well cooked, well prepared to disinform and misinform people.
Kalof says combating disinformation is more difficult due to limited funding, security risk, and restricted access to information.
I have gone to the regional delegation of transport to ask for statistics of registered cars in the southwest, particularly in Bouya. And I was told to go and stand on the road to start counting the cars myself.
Journalism experts are urging fact-checkers to keep fighting disinformation and practicing responsible reporting.
You have to keep pushing for laws that will guarantee for access to information. In Cameroon, the Constitution provides for that, but we do not yet have Access to Information Acts.
And just like elsewhere around the world, journalists here say social media is the primary source of disinformation in Cameroon. Njozeka Danhatu, VOA News, Bouya, Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam, filling in for James Buddy in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 25th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still come on our program, you'll hear about the Assad regime collapse and how things are changing for asylum seekers in Europe. Over the past decade, European countries have opened their doors to more than 1 million asylum seekers fleeing Syria's civil war. Now, with the fall of Bashar al-Assad's regime, some are controversially putting the brakes on new asylum requests. The swift political changes have also left Syrians in Europe both jubilant and fearful about the future. Lisa Bryant has more from the French city of Orléans.
Nabil Attar has brought a slice of his native Syria to the medieval French town of Orléans. Recipes he learned from his mother, memories of the homeland he left nearly a decade ago after being extorted, he says, by Bashar al-Assad's government.
We were threatened by some armed people to pay money, and they kidnapped my boy, it was so complicated, and I paid a lot of money to get my son back.
Once a successful businessman in Damascus, Attar left with his family, joining hundreds of thousands of Syrians fleeing to Europe. In Paris, he received training in running a restaurant. In 2018, he and his wife opened Narenj here in Orléans. The name means bitter orange in Arabic. The family received French citizenship. Attar says people here have been welcoming.
We never had any problem. We never faced any... I don't like to use racism, but we never encountered that.
Then came news earlier this month that Assad's regime had collapsed. It triggered celebrations in Orléans, including at Attar's restaurant.
I'm hoping and I believe that Syria would be better, much, much, much better than before. I have no concern about that.
But Syria's regime change is sparking other concerns. Some European Union governments have frozen new Syrian asylum requests, arguing the Assad regime that triggered them no longer exists. France is studying the matter. And at a time of rising anti-immigration sentiment, some European politicians are going further, saying Syrian refugees should go home. Rights groups and many Syrians argue they still face threats. Olivia Sundberg-Diaz is with Amnesty International.
What is most important now should be the safety of Syrian refugees and of people that are seeking protection. This has to be prioritized over political interests.
That debate is echoed in Orléans, where some Syrians are anxious about the new leadership in Damascus. Syrian Dr. Ramez Khadri has been living in Orléans for years.
I'm worried about the country. I'm worried about the people because they're extremists.
J'ai peur pour l'avenir.
Attar is more optimistic.
And I know many people that are willing to go back because they couldn't integrate in the society. Asylum, if you have a real reason, you will get it.
He hopes to return to a post-Assad Syria.
I would like to go back and visit my family, my house, see my friends, see the streets, where I worked, where I lived.
But not for good. His life and future, Attar says, are now in France. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Orléans, France.
Pope Francis said the story of Jesus's birth as a poor carpenter's son should instill hope that all people can make an impact on the world, as the pontiff on Tuesday led the world's Roman Catholics into Christmas.
E ce ne sono tante desolazioni in questo tempo.
Speaking in Italian during his sermon, the Pope said there is so much desolation in this time. Think of the wars and children being machine-gunned, bombs on schools and hospitals. He urged people not to delay, to not be drawn down, but to be drawn by the good news. The pontiff added that hope is a summons not to tarry, to be kept back by our old habits, or to wallow in mediocrity or laziness. Francis, celebrating the 12th Christmas of his pontificate, presided at the solemn Christmas Eve Mass in St. Peter's Basilica and opened the 2025 Catholic Holy Year, which the Vatican expects will bring some 32 million tourists to Rome next year. A Catholic Holy Year, also known as a Jubilee, is considered a time of peace, forgiveness, and pardon. And that is it for this Wednesday, December 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. If you celebrate, Merry Christmas to you. We thank you for spending your holiday morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We also are on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, wishing you a great rest of your week. We'll see you again tomorrow morning.
Presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.
diaspora has long played a vital role in supporting families back home. On the next edition of Our Voices, we'll explore opportunities for Africans in the diaspora to find financial success in their native countries, challenges they might face, and explore innovative platforms that are helping to bridge the gap. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 9.